based on their recommendation to send it to the full board, I have asked ICON to be here today and walk through what they're proposing to assist Sarah. So with that, we have Michael Tebow, who's the president of ICON.
Hi. Thank you for inviting us. This presentation is going to be very, very, very similar to what was presented last time. And if you guys have any questions during the whole process or any slides, feel free to shout them out. This is kind of what we'll get covering who we are, who ICON is, who our clients are, the pension project elements, our methodology, our tools and reports, and then the audit project itself. ICON is a data management focused organization. We're not a programming.
Could I interrupt with apologies? Yeah. I should have announced when we went back in open session, and it just struck me what happened in closed session.
Oh.
Oh, no problem. But we are ICON's a very unique company in that all we focus on is the data behind the applications of any organization or corporation. Okay, that means we do analysis, we do audit and assessment, we do conditioning, which conditioning is the same as like scrubbing or cleansing. We do transformation, migration, conversion, integration, reconciliation, bridging, stewardship, and governance. Okay, we are the industry leader within the pension industry. As you'll see here shortly, what makes us different is we focus just on data. We're not everything to everyone. We never try to be. We don't want to be. We are specifically focused on data because data is the fuel to your application. You wouldn't put diesel fuel in a Ferrari. You want good quality data in your application. These are just some of our clients. They go from very big, some of the biggest in the United States, to very small. And everything in between. Like again, we have the most experience in the pension industry, and I would say in many industries. But pension is definitely, these are the ones within the pension industry. Our staff are very good. We have over, I think last count, we had I think over 150 years combined of pension experience of our entire staff.
Are we big enough for you? I'm just looking at Kansas as the only one even close to.
Oh no, we've done everything from like really small to very big, and it really doesn't matter. Size really doesn't matter because it's about the data, the complexity of the data, small, the age, all that stuff. But we've had everything from very very small. Very, very large, and our process is flexible enough to accommodate, and we apply it all the way through. Our methodology is very, very unique, and which it's actually what sets ICON apart, and we'll kind of get to that. But the methodology has been in development for. I developed the methodology about a little over 25 years ago, and it's worked in the insurance industry. It's worked for the federal government. Telecommunications, financials, and then pension. There are three aspects of a pension project out there. There are the system, which is the business rules and processes, software application, technology, and infrastructure. There's the people aspect. It's the staffing, the implementation, the training, and the management of the organization. Okay, those are the three different, and then there's the data. Okay, the data from your old system going to your new system. And it's the assessment of the legacy systems, the collecting, profiling, cleansing, and organizing all those activities. And then the conversion and quality control. Quality control would be the reconciliation, making sure that A got over here correctly, and everything's in sync. Okay, that's very, very important. The one that we are focused on, and the one that's really the easiest to address, but is, you know, it's the easiest one to address because everything, but the sometimes the one that causes the most pain is the data aspect. We're kind of like on focusing on what can go wrong, is most projects focus mainly on the application, okay? When the application is not fed the correct, when the data is not correct, the users can lose confidence, okay? They trust when things do go wrong, they lose confidence. You don't want that in your new system. They will blame the system, and sometimes it's not the system. Sometimes it's the data behind the system. In the application world, they want that application to get in and everything else, and they don't really, they're very good at application development, but they are not highly attuned to the data conversion that their application is going to be running on, okay? Data and people also cause things to go wrong. And what can we do to reduce the risk of what can go wrong? Okay, we reduce the project risk by first addressing the data. If we take data off the shelf, okay, and make sure that's good, then any issues with the application can be addressed quickly. Okay, they don't have to guess if it's data or is it the application. If you address the data first, we know it's the application. It's very controllable. It's the most controllable because there's a good saying, data doesn't lie. It is what it is, okay? And we can control that. And one of the major reasons is when there's an application failure, it could be the data or the application. If we remove the data part of it, we know exactly what to address, and it gets addressed quicker. And a lot of times the application is running right. It's just the data fed to it can be wrong, everything. So we want to verify that. Less project risk during UAT when data is not a consideration. UAT is sped up. UAT is quicker. People have more confidence in the application, the reports, all that stuff. And then once at that point, address the people element of that. The ICON methodology, how we apply the methodology is unique, is we take your organization's data and we break it into what we consider data levels, okay? And they're very categorized, succinct areas of information. And then we tie all those data levels together in a sequential manner, okay? And then we address one. After we address one, we address the second one, the third, the fourth. And typically in our methodology, we have 10 data levels, okay? Then we have, within those data levels, within that, and you can look at a data level as a specific grouping of information. Within that, we have basically a data library of over 750 commonly used data rules, okay, within the pension industry. And then there's also additional ones that are specific for CSERA, okay? So that we walk in knowing what some of the rules are and everything. It's not just a whack-a-mole or a guess or a hunt, you know, or a peck. We have a plan, and our plans work for very successfully in all those other clients. And you're more than welcome to call all of them, okay?
Can you briefly summarize what you're going to be doing for CSERA?
Yeah.
And the scope?
Sure. The key data points that you guys are addressed in your RFP are found within our DQCP library. We're going to take those data quality. We are going to take those key data elements that you guys have identified within your scope and basically compare those to make sure that the target and the legacy system are correct and they match and the reports are, you know, and everything. And then we're going to, if we do find outliers, we're going to be able to identify those for you, saying these do not fit your business rules, these do not fit, these are a mismatch, okay? And then we can help you address those and resolve, categorize those and prioritize those and help you resolve those and give you a plan on how to do all that, you know, with the prioritization, with the categorization, with a how, the best industry way to resolve them and to reconcile them, okay? The confidence, I mean, you guys can read this as well as I can spew it out to you guys. Our methodology is solid, and your RFP fits exactly what we do. The data elements that you guys identified and will help you identify going forward are already in our library, because they're the common issues that plague every pension organization, no matter the size or anything like that. How are we going to do it? Those are going to identify the legacy source, apply the business rules. We assess the key data points that you guys have done. And for each of them, we're going to provide the executive data quality checkpoints, which a checkpoint is basically a business rule, okay? We call them DQCPs because some checkpoints may or may not apply. So if they don't apply, we just move on. But if it does apply, we report on that. And then we make sure that they reconcile, okay? And it goes through many project phases here. We identify each data element, apply the business rules, perform the data profiling process, perform the migration, and then reconcile. A data quality checkpoint. If we find an issue with your data, with one of your key data points, what we're going to do is, which would be something like this, a member mailing address. If you guys require one, so forth and so on, we're first going to create a form, because it's very important to know, one, the business rule that you're checking. Two, what are the instances that fail that business rule? And three, how you resolved it, okay? Because even afterwards, you're going to go, we had this issue. How do we resolve it, and what were the decisions made in that resolution? All this will be tracked and documented within our DQCP forms, okay?
So we have, like, examples of stuff you would catch?
Yes. Oh, examples of what we catch? You know, addresses where the person had a member address on Rose Street, and then all the checks are going to Willow Street, okay? And they're not mismatched. Or the birth date's wrong, okay? The birth date's ahead of, behind the retirement date. Birth date person, if you look at the birth date, he's retiring at age 14, okay? That's a dream, but, it's not everything. But our key data points, I mean, there's a ton of common issues along with addresses. You know, is the zip code match the city? A lot of times you could have a Kansas City zip code and a California state, and there's no check or variance on that.
So you used an outside data to find, like, where the right zip code. One issue we've had in the past, when somebody passes away and we're not notified, the check keeps going to that. Do you have anything in place for that?
We don't want to imply that you have to use a service or a tool, okay? Because a lot of organizations have go through tools themselves to verify the death date, and they for everything, okay? But if you have if someone's died and the retirement check has, been going on for a long time afterwards to that member and not to the beneficiary, you know, at that point, if we have a death date, yeah, there's we'd look that to the plan and go, why is that, and stuff like that. But as far as, but I, we can definitely recommend tools to verify people whose death has happened, and that's on register and stuff like that.
Okay. And Gabe, just as a side note, in the RFP, we indicated the key data elements that we're going to have them analyzing, and it does include service credit and contributions and, you know, a number of the key items that are included in evaluation.
Will it also include figuring out the formula, which tier the person is when they retire, and that calculation?
Well, it'll be comparing the tiers and, like, looking at the legacy system and looking at CPAS and seeing, you know, what tiers for this person and this one and this one. And then if there's a variance, it'll be indicated on the report, and we'll have the detail.
Just so I'm clear, this is essentially just an audit of data migration from our previous legacy pension
correct.
Management system to the current? That.
Yeah.
So that's all that they're essentially doing, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's only be as good as the two?
Yeah. So they're going to be comparing the two systems and identifying variances in the in those systems and providing the at the member level the detail.
So if you talk about the zip codes, you're saying one system may have one zip code, one may have another, but it both could be wrong. You're not going to check if the zip code's correct.
Right.
You're
well,
just see if the two don't match.
Right. Well, because people move. And if there's, we'll identify the authoritative data source. Which the authoritative data source is, we're going to come to you guys and go, okay, if this person's, because it could be in an active state, okay, if the person's active, if it's an active status, meaning active being defined as currently contributing, okay, working for an employer, he's currently contributing, that person's active, okay, we're going to say, what's the authoritative source? What's the one source you guys believe is the true source? Then we're going to compare that to the other source, okay? Now, vice versa, if it's if he's retired, that source could change. That source could change. So we're gonna compare. It's not like we go to one address and everything. It's one. We're gonna take one address compared to another, depending upon the status or the plan. You know, all that stuff. Where the check's going to? Is it a beneficiary of the member? You know how that's all working.
But you're only gonna know what's in the two systems.
Correct.
Not anywhere outside of that.
Well, we can. Yeah, we can. We're just comparing the two systems.
I give mismatches.
For this scope of work.
Right. So if, for example, in the case you guys are talking about, if in the older system and the newer system the addresses don't match, why? Essentially, and you're going to go to essentially staff and say, well, that person moved, whatever else.
Got it.
So you're going to you're just going to flag all the nuances between in the data migration, and that's it.
Yeah, we're going to flag. We're going to identify at the member level, and really, if anything has changed, like street level, if the street's changed, zip code level, city level, at the member level, we're going to tell you exactly what the deltas are.
And are you doing that in terms of looking at the actual data that's retained in the databases, or are you looking at it from what's the output that the two systems are providing?
We're going to look. The best source of truth is the data itself.
Yeah.
We're
going to
compare.
So you're looking
just
at the
data
at the database. Level.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you,
Will. So I would, no offense to you,
okay.
Just in, I mean, there's a recommendation from staff on allowing the CEO, so I would recommend that a voting member today make the motion.
Is your fire truck double
parked? No, it's not.
Hey, this
I'm not leaving
15
minutes, so I would second that motion.
I can't
make it. He's not motioning.
No offense to you. I'm just trying to
make the
motion.
No, it's no offense to you. I'm just trying. This was already essentially, there's multiple companies that have been essentially evaluated. We're just giving authorization to the CEO.
Saying you had
now that I understand essentially what the RFPs and scope and what you're going to be providing, I'm fine in terms of moving forward with the recommendation.
So am I.
But I can't make the motion.
I make the motion.
Okay, Tim?
I'll second.
Okay, so you do have a motion and a second
yeah.
at this point.
We have a couple of questions.
We're still in discussion at that going forward. Harvey, you had a question?
Yeah, for the board, I just wanted the scope of this sounds like it's internal looking, that it's reconciling a CSERA record with the legacy record with the CPAS record in CSERA. Will there be a reconciliation with the actuarial extract as well and with the employer data, that, which is how it came into our system?
They're mainly focused on the two systems and not looking at this is actual extract file and the components in that. They're looking strictly at the data.
At our internal data.
Yes.
Records.
Which could be wrong.
Will there be a phase when we reconcile that with what data the actuary has? So, for example, if somebody's age at entry and their data is different than our data, there'll be a reconciliation.
Different project.
And what the employer gave us on that individual as to age at entry into the system.
Well, I think there's a couple different, like the, because we have the employer audits that are ongoing where we're taking a look at that for the employer piece. But as far as that, what we're actually pulling out of the database as far as the reports go that go to the actuary, that's not within their scope currently.
And the next report to the actuary presumably is now corrected by reason of this process?
Not necessarily.
No.
Why wouldn't it be?
The reason why I raise it just in fairness is that I've seen in a couple of systems significant discrepancies between the employer, the data that comes to the employer that goes into the retirement system, that then goes to the actuary for the actuarial extract, and if those don't reconcile, because they're not ordinarily audited on a regular basis and tested, and if that doesn't reconcile, then you can be off by hundreds of, I have seen hundreds of millions of dollars be off in that. So I'm wondering if there's another phase of this that ought to be considered, which is making sure employer data, actuarial data, and the systems data all provide the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not within the scope.
It was in the scope of this.
It's not in the scope of this audit, but that is something that we're looking at. I mean, the focus and the main reason why we're doing this is it's part of our decommission, our subledger decommissioning plan, so that we can know that, okay, there are some knowns, and we're going to make sure to fix certain things in CPAS, so that it gives us a greater comfort level in turning off subledger. So that's the focus of this.
Understood. When you decommission, Harvey, were you finished?
No.
When you decommission the subledger, is that what you call it?
Yeah.
Legacy system, is it archived?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my questions.
It is.
Okay.
And if we needed that expanded service, I kind of just step right in.
Answers that question.
That would not be.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys need, the kind of going back, we've done conversions for everyone from, we've even walked in to organizations that have already done conversion that had major issues that did not utilize their current system that they bought because the data issues were helping them clean their data so that they can get a good handle on, and they want to get that high quality data level. But yes, we can.
Debbie?
So I guess the next question would be, does it make sense to do, would there be a savings to the system if we did that second part of reconciling to the plan sponsor data and or actuary data at the same time that we do this project?
I'm sorry.
Separate project.
would there be a benefit to us to doing those other two components, the reconciliation, the actuarial data, and the plan sponsor data to our, converted data? Is there some benefit to us doing that all together in one project?
Out of scope. Way out of scope.
I think that it would, the project would, it would greatly increase the time of when we're transitioning off of subledger.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, for me, I think it's best that we keep the elements separate.
Okay.
That's a good question, though.
Now, doesn't the compliance officer audit each individual employer, and wouldn't that be one of the check marks of what they're reporting to what the actuary has in terms of, to Harvey's question? I mean, wouldn't that be a normal process for the compliance officer?
Yeah, so there's two points. Two of the points that Harvey's making, one is on the employer side, and our compliance officer, when they do the employer audits, they're looking at their system and our system and looking at a number of elements around that.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to what's actually getting reported to the actuary, plans get themselves into trouble in two main ways. One is actually when there's conversions, and obviously the data is inaccurate, so it goes into the new system, and then it gets reported to the actuary, and then, you know, issues ensue. And then the other piece is also, okay, your database is good, but what is getting generated in a report to the actuary and that data is not correct. So those are the two different pieces. So this piece is really looking at the database itself,
right,
and make sure that, like, good data in, good data out, and then reviewing the reporting part of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another analysis that we're conducting, because we want to have the actual info, all of it, come out of CPAS, which right now it's not. So that is something that we're looking at.
Just one additional thing worth noting is that audit of the plan sponsors is on a very multi-year track,
mm-hmm, yeah,
in terms of that actually being complete. So we're a ways off on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's something that we can also, if we choose to do so, bring in additional resources to, you know, narrow that time frame.
Jerry,
a couple of questions if you've got the time.
Yeah,
a couple of them have to do with this proposal, but also, are we running parallel, or is this a cold cut?
You mean currently?
Yeah, I mean, it's we've already cut it.
We haven't cut it.
Haven't cut it.
We're still using Subledger for certain functions.
Will we be doing a cold cut or running parallel? Or?
Well, usually you would, so right now we're running in parallel, and then when we eventually get to the time where we feel like, okay, CPAS, we're doing a great job, normally you run some months where you continue with Subledger, but then at one point you have CPAS as a full book of record, but
right,
then you still run Subledger for a certain period of time.
Okay, and I was going to ask the archive
question. Sure that thank you're getting you the same results.
Part of the proposal, it suggests, and I'm prepared to support the proposal if I were voting, but I'm not. I'm still prepared to support the proposal. There's a $225,000 estimate, but it says it's an estimate. And then there's a suggestion in here later on about effective change management, mm-hmm, being a success to key project. And I would certainly agree with that, but that seems to me far more applicable to system development. What kind of change management are we talking about? Once the specs are laid down as to what we're comparing,
right,
what kind of change management would we be looking at?
If we have, there's a lot of times where, like, change management is, we'll be working with you guys as determine the business rules, okay? And you'll look at the business rules. Very common. This is very common. You'll reiterate what your business rules are, okay? And then we will find the deltas. We'll present you with the deltas. And as your staff looks over it, they go, oh, well, in, you know, 2002, this happened, and it lasted for 18 months. And then we switch back over, whatever. And then at that point in time, we have to make sure to account for that 18 months where that business rule changed or someone did something for 18 months that they shouldn't have, everything. We have to incorporate that into our business rule. We have to incorporate that rule, everything. And then we readjust the deltas. That way, the business rules change. And that way, the result, and no one, very seldom does anyone know the entire history of all the over business rule and all the changes that have come to be. That change management, what we're talking about, is those changing and tracking those changes to the scripts and to the deltas and to the.
So it's incumbent upon the staff, obviously, to try and nail this down as tightly as you can beforehand. Otherwise, that $225,000 becomes an entry level.
Mm-hmm.
That's a what do they call it, an ante in a poker game, and we'll get to the other bets later on. So I mean, might there be consideration to a not to exceed price without having to come back? And what if you blow through this and it's $500,000 and the board didn't even know about it?
Well, the board will know. I mean, in your scenario, $500,000, the board will know about it. I mean, if it's something that, you know, if we're going above the 225 by more, you know, $5,000, that may not, you know, I mean, I'll be giving the board updates on this, but if it looks like there's some issues that are encountered where it looks like it's going to be over 225, that will definitely be brought back to the board. I think that in a lot of contracts, having a not to exceed is a smart decision. I think that with this one, and you can comment additionally on this, but just because once they get in there and they start identifying things, if there's additional work that's needed to be done, I think it's, I think that it makes sense to possibly not have a not to exceed on this project.
Okay, well, the alternative.
But we can obviously do that.
But then I would, modify or ask some consideration that we formalize it. I trust that you would come back.
Yeah.
But we formalize it in some way that if the contract were to exceed $250,000, that it would require board approval or $300,000. Whatever kind of reasonable latitude you might want.
Does the maker of the motion
agree to
that?
I'll amend the motion to include a not to exceed of $250,000 without further board approval.
Good suggestion, Jerry.
I just have some other questions that I've come up since.
Yeah, that's right. You've had time, and I'm fine.
And there's actually two different things on our on our client list. Our change requests and our estimates have never been exceeded. Okay, the only time a change request has been issued is when we were like really close to finish line. And a client came back and wanted us to grandfather basically a whole new system into the process. And that blew out the scope.
In future presentations, Mike, we don't want you to have to say, with the exception of one client.
No, we've never had to. But you ask all of them that all of our estimates are spot on.
Okay.
We stand by.
So can you walk me through the process of what actually is going to happen once the contract's signed, in terms of you're going to essentially have two different database copies of the database? You're not going to run this against a production database. And you're going to spend essentially a lot of labor hours mapping out, with those business process and business rules that you talked about, mapping out the different data fields between the two systems. And then you essentially run a script that runs through every single element of the DBs. And then what else would it be?
Once we have the two copies of production, then we're going to, very much verbatim is what you're saying, we're going to report on those. Then we're going to work with you guys as far as how do we resolve these? How do these get resolved? What order should they be resolved in? Because a lot of times if you fix one, then a lot of the other ones will go away. Because they all have a relationship and they all have a hierarchy of priority. So if you fix one up here, it may make some others disappear, because right now they're in balance. What we want to make sure is they're in balance and they're in sync. So we'll work with you on the categorization, the prioritization, and how to resolve that, and then go forward. And then, making sure that everything is in sync.
Mm-hmm.
And then providing the reports, all that stuff is just part of the whole entire plan, mm-hmm. the process.
Okay.
We don't have a tool, because all those tools that you see out there, one, they're enormously expensive, okay? And two, my staff are really good at writing scripts. I can write a script a lot faster and modify a lot faster and maintain it for cheaper. And it's directly for your purposes.
Mm-hmm. When we did the migration, did the vendor that did the migration, or unless we did the migration, did they run an analysis in terms of the data, in terms of an audit of fields going over and stuff like that?
There was testing performed at some level.
But it wasn't a row-by-row comparison?
That's not my understanding, yeah.
Okay. And then in this discussion, thank you very much for the presentation. The thing that Harvey brought up, which I understand, being a data guy, I understand the importance of looking at the two databases and making sure that the migration and auditing and all that stuff, but I think there's also extreme value in knowing from the employer, of course, but I would also be concerned about the step after just the two databases, which is the user interface or the reports coming out or the fields that are going in, to make sure that those match. Because when you're changing the data fields, you might hit the right data, but then it might look different on an output of a report going to an actuary, for example. So Harvey brought up a great point, and I just want to reemphasize that. So, yeah.
Yeah, and we will be looking at that. I will say that I do know that when the plan depooled in 09, there was extensive work done around the data and what was getting reported to the actuary. But yeah, it's something we're definitely going to be working on.
Good. So just one further point. In your presentation at the very beginning, you had three key elements to the project. It was the people, the process, and the data. And you are clearly very much an expert at the data. My question is, we can go through, clean up the data, and have it all perfectly clean, but if we haven't addressed the people in the process at the same time, we may be back doing this in a few years. And I think that was a part of one of you already sort of made that point. But so what are we doing on the people in the process? Do we believe that our current people are trained in an adequate process to keep us maintained with good data going forward after this process is complete?
So I think that it's something that we are continuing to work on. Are we 120% there? And I think that as the variances are discovered and as we work through them, because part of it is going to be having CPAS do some programming on their side to fix some things, and then us taking a look and really assessing, okay, how did these things occur, taking a look and seeing if there's some processes that we need to tweak. So I think that it's a discovery project for us as well.
Is that a discovery project as a part of this data project?
It will be something that comes out of that. Because obviously we don't want to spend all this time and energy and resources and then, a number of years down the road be like, okay.
Messed up again.
Yeah, messed up again. And then also in preparation for at some point converting to a new system, we need to make sure that we have things good between now and then as well. So it's definitely something that we're looking at and we're going to be resolving.
So what's the time frame of us working through the rest of that people process part? A year, 5 months, a month?
So I think that their project, I believe, was in the 6 month range.
Okay.
And then once those items are identified, there's going to be a lot of work and resources on working through that, getting CPAS good to go, turning the switch over, but also in the process of working through that, working through and documenting better processes where they're needed. So as far as the timeline goes, I mean, I would say probably the middle of next year, the middle to end of next year, I think is probably a realistic time frame.
So a year to 18 months.
Yeah.
Okay. Any further discussion? We have a we have a motion, and it's been seconded to authorize Gale to enter into a contract, I believe, with a maximum of $250,000. Should that amount be exceeded, she needs to come back to the board for renewed approval. Discussion all completed. All in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Abstain? Motion passes unanimously. All right, thank you.
Thank you.